ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Welcome everyone to Radha Gopinath Temple, especially my dear God brother Mahadyuti Prabhu. Very senior disciple of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, who has for over 30 years given his life and soul to serve the Vaishnavas and spread this great mission. He was president of the temple in downtown London for many years. He's been a great book distributor, and I don't want to spend too much time, but in quality, he's a very dear friend and a person who has really given his life and soul to Srila Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission, and has been very progressively and intimately engaged in some of the greatest projects of Srila Prabhupada. Let us wholeheartedly welcome Mahadyuti Prabhu to Sri Radha Gopinath Temple. This morning I asked Govinda Prabhu what I should speak about today, and his reply was to speak about Krishna. Since Janmashtami is coming in just a few days, so on his order and with your permission, can you all hear me nicely? I will try to say something about Krishna. A few days ago, we celebrated Lord Balaram's appearance day. Srila Prabhupada explained to us how we must gain the blessings of Lord Balaram in order to approach Krishna. Balar means strength. Balaram means one who takes great pleasure in exhibiting his strength. And this strength is not material. It is spiritual. The real and only strength is spiritual strength. Because all apparent material strength is completely resting upon the spiritual platform. People may be strong because of their knowledge, or because of their physical powers, or because of their wealth, or their influence over others, or their beauty. So many ways people can conquer others by strength. But none of that can be exhibited in a dead body. Yes? What is the humor or the prowess or the intelligence of a dead body. As soon as the soul leaves, the body's nothing but a dead lump of matter. Actually, it is the spirit soul that is the source of all strength. In all species, the elephant is considered a very powerful animal. But when the elephant's dead, then the insects eat him. Yes? Can't defend himself from being eaten to the bone by insects. The strength of the soul is only because we are part and parcel of Krishna. Mamaivam so jiva loke jiva bhuta sanat. Every living being is part and parcel of Krishna. Whatever attraction we may have toward others, it's only because we're living. And we're only living because we're a part of Krishna. So when we try to solve problems on the material platform, the best we could do is arrange for some temporary cosmetic relief. But no problem can really be solved by material efforts. This was very strong. I have to get used to this new technology. That's probably going to happen many times. Prahlad Maharaj told that the solutions to the problems that people make on the material platform, they generally create more difficult, complicated problems than the real problem. And that's actually the solutions. And we see within the world today, the biggest complicated problems are due to previous solutions to smaller problems. Global warming, so much politics, nuclear arms, pollution, sectarian religious fanaticism. They're all sprouted from people trying to solve problems. So therefore, a devotee understands that only taking shelter of the Lord and being an instrument of the spiritual power of the Lord could we really solve any of our own problems or anyone else's problems. Lord Balaram appeared within the womb of Devaki in order to prepare the way for Krishna. In the spiritual world, Lord Balaram manifests as the spiritual world. Vrindavan is an expansion of Balaram. And similarly, the Lord's ornaments, his shoes, his clothes, his paraphernalia are all expansions of Balaram, who's ever enthusiastic to serve Krishna. Balaram is God himself, none different than Krishna, but in a role of service to Krishna. And Krishna is always eager to serve Balaram. So the Supreme Absolute Truth is always eager to serve. There's that beautiful song and also description in this Shastra of little baby Krishna floating in the ocean of dissolution on a banyan tree leaf in a little baby form, sucking on his toe. Now, why would God, the Almighty, whose partial manifestation is Jehovah, Allah, Narasingha, Vishnu, Mahavishnu, why would he want to suck on his toe? Because he sees the ecstasy of his devotees. How happy, how blissful they are by serving those feet, that he wants to taste what they're tasting. Similarly, Krishna appeared as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to taste the nectar of the love of his devotee, especially Radharani, who is the source of all devotion. So there is no greater aspiration than to be the servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord. Even the Lord is aspiring for that position. So Balaram is eternally engaged in loving service. And as Lord Nityananda Prabhu, he has come in this world to prepare the way for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Krishna himself. So Balaram appeared in Devaki's womb to make it into the spiritual world so that Krishna could come and be happy. And to assist Krishna in performing the greatest of all services within material creation, which is to deliver the conditioned souls and attract their hearts back into his loving service. Now, Balaram's appearance day is extraordinarily special. Not only is it because Balaramji appeared on that day, but some of the most wonderful pastimes that we read about Krishna happened on Balaram's appearance day. Because Balaram, he is Baladev, he is full of all spiritual strength, who is serving Krishna in all the various rasas, in neutrality, as a servant, as a friend, as a lover in his expansion of Ananga Manjari. And also because he's older brother, he had Vatsalya Ras. He was always protecting Krishna. That was his love. So many of the most wonderful pastimes could only take place when Balaram was not there. And Balaram did not go out to herd the cows or the calves with Krishna every year on his birthday, because Rohini would keep him home and perform a special sacred bath for his protection, and also have him give so much charity to the Brahmins and to the common people. This is the Vedic way of celebrating birthday. Not to take, but to give. Because if people give you things, you get things. But if you give to others, you get blessings. When you receive blessings from great souls, when you render service to great souls, we acquire something that is forever. Neha bikramanasosti pratyavayo nivittite. Krishna tells in Gita, any endeavor on the path of devotional service is eternal. It's on the spiritual platform and it never ends. So when you give gifts to a devotee, you're rendering devotional service. and you're gaining wealth that nothing in creation can ever take away from you. So the greatest gift is the opportunity to serve. Somebody does something for you, it's all right. But if you can do something for someone else, that is glorious. So Rohini, thinking how important Nanda Maharaj, how beloved Balaramji is to them, wanted him to gain the greatest blessings on his birthday. So all day long he would be giving gifts to people, especially the Brahmins. And taking blessings. 1 year, Lord Brahma, he stole all the calves and all the cowherd boys on Balaram's appearance day. And then the next year, he came exactly on the same day to see what happened, and he saw that apparently nothing happened. All the gopas and all the calves were still playing. And he was thinking, but I stole them all. And he knew what they looked like. And they were all in a cave in some mystic slumber that Brahmaji put them in. But at the same time, they were all playing with Krishna. Krishna personally expanded himself identically to be each calf and each gopa. So much so, even their own mothers and fathers could not even question that they were not their original children. The only difference is they love their children more than ever before. They love their children just like they love Krishna. Only Balaramji detected it. Just a few days before his birthday the next year. And it was on Balaram's birthday that Brahma came and realized, when he was utterly bewildered, how is it that everything is the same? Then every calf and every gopa manifested the Vishnu form with four arms. Then he was really bewildered. He was speechless. And after that, everything disappeared and all was left was Krishna, standing alone, looking for his friends with a lump of fruit salad in his hand. And when he saw Krishna in that most innocent, unassuming form of a cowherd boy, Brahma realized his supreme opulence and surrendered. Soon after that, Krishna entered into his Poganda age, between 6 and 10. And on the bright fortnight, the 8th day of the month of Kartik, which we call Gopastami, Krishna and Balaram, with a beautiful ceremony, were given the service of taking care of the cows, from the calves to the cows. They were only 6 years old. That same year, in the summertime, on Balaram's appearance day, Balaram stayed home to take his abhishek and give in charity. And on this particular day, Krishna and the gopas, they were herding their cows. And somehow the cows became very thirsty. And they ran to a lake that was just on the side of the Yamuna River. Large lake. And they drank the water. And the gopas, also being very thirsty that day, they began to drink the water. Suddenly, they all fell unconscious. The water was poisoned by the presence of the serpent Kaliya. How strong was this poison? This poison was so powerful that it caused all the water in the entire lake to be boiling. Can you imagine? And this, the Harivamsa explains that it was one yojana wide. This lake was 8 miles in size. And the whole thing was bubbling and simmering. Smoke coming off it. Sparks coming out of it. It was very deep also. But the gopas somehow or other didn't notice it. It was so powerful that just the breeze that touched those poisonous waters became so vaporous that any bird that flew overhead, however high, would immediately drop dead. And for long distances all around the lake, there was nothing alive. Any animal, any tree, any vegetation, everything died just by the breeze that may have touched it. Now one may ask, how is it that the gopas could die? Because according to the Bhagavatam, they were dead. Because we understand that many of them are nitya siddhas. They descended from the spiritual world with Krishna and Balaram. So they had spiritual bodies. Ishvara Parama Krishna Sachit Ananda Vigraha. That Krishna's body is eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. On the spiritual platform, the body and the soul are one and the same. So how could the cowherd boys die if their bodies are immortal? Krishna's lila shakti, his potency, which is especially for making his pastimes very attractive and very pleasurable, made it appear that they were dead. Then Krishna, who is all merciful, he glanced upon all the cows and the gopas. That glance alone brought them all back to life. They opened their eyes. They stood up and they looked around. And they were wondering, because they were feeling within their heart of hearts by Krishna's own arrangement, that they were dead, that they had just died, and that Krishna's glance brought them back to life. Now, they would not think that Krishna is God, because that would interfere with their loving friendship with him. So they were thinking that Garga Muni, he said that Krishna was very powerful and that he would always protect his devotees, so he must be empowered by Lord Narayan to do these things. Krishna then, after giving life by his simple glance to the cowherd boys, wanted to do something that would be forever engraved within the pages of history. One of the most wonderful of all pastimes ever manifested within Brahma's creation. Now, how Krishna's glance can give such life to the dead? That is a subject that many volumes of books can be written on. An expansion of Krishna, Karano Dakshayi Vishnu, or Mahavishnu. Simply by his glance, he impregnates the entire cosmic manifestation with life. First is the Mahatattva. And then by the glance of Vishnu, he impregnates all living entities into material creation. And by that glance, he activates the three modes of material nature. And all life and creation begins to move. So factually, all life within the entire creation has been brought about by one moment glance of an expansion of Krishna. That is his power. When Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur would say, do not try to see Krishna, but try to serve Krishna in such a way that he wants to see you. This is a very deep and profound statement. Because when Krishna is pleased to see us, then he casts his favorable glance upon us. Jeev jago, jeev jago, goro chandra bole, kota nidra jayo maya, pisa chiro kole. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, wake up, sleeping souls. You are sleeping in the lap of the witch of Maya. The soul is by nature a lover of Krishna. The soul is by nature above all the miseries of material existence. The soul is transcendental. But it is asleep. And there's only one way to wake up the soul. To receive the favorable glance of Krishna. There's no other way. You can't wake up yourself because Maya is covering you in such a deep sleep. Alarm clock may be able to wake up your body. But the acharyas explain there are three types of dreaming in this world. One is when you're asleep and you're dreaming. Two is when you're awake and you're dreaming to think that you're this body and this mind. That's another type of dream. If you're not a liberated soul, you're asleep. And this whole world and your whole identity and the whole life, everything about you is just a dream. It's just a long dream. And then at the time of the cosmic dissolution, when Mahavishnu inhales, then we all become unconscious. And that's another type of dream. Now, how to wake up from that dream? A dream that we have been, that has been manifesting in these different categories since time immemorial. Only by Krishna's grace, by his simple glance. And when Krishna's pleased with us, sincerely pleased with us, bhaktya mama vijananti yavan yascha smitatvata. Krishna tells in Gita, only by devotional service can you know me as I am. How is that? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains how there is no cause for bhakti. Through bhakti, we can attain prema. What is the difference between sadhana bhakti and prema bhakti? The difference between an unripe mango and a ripe mango. They're actually the same thing. They're not different. Just different stages. So from sadhana bhakti, we attain prema bhakti. But where do we get bhakti from? Savai pungshang paro dharmo yato bhaktir hokshije ahoitaki aprati hata yatma suprasidati. Bhakti is unconditional. It's causeless. Rupa Goswami explains we can only attain bhakti from Krishna. And Krishna only manifests bhakti through the heart of his devotees. When we associate with devotees, adoshadatata sadhu, I told you, we become attracted to the association of devotees somehow or other. And by their blessings, by their favor, bhakti awakens within our heart. Krishna manifests bhakti to us through his devotees. But what is it about that devotee? It's the bhakti in his or her heart that awakens our bhakti. So bhakti is causeless. It is eternal. We can only get bhakti from bhakti. When Krishna sees that we are pleasing, we are sincere, we are serious, we have no ulterior motives, then he casts his glance upon us, which can come in many, many different forms. And then our bhakti awakens. Our love awakens to our original identity. After awakening all the cowherd boys from death, as Krishna is inviting to He comes to this world again and again and again just to awaken us from death. Kali Kale Namarupe Krishna Avatar. Krishna appears in his name just to awaken us from a spiritually dead state to our true life. Now try to picture this scenario. Here is this massive 8-mile-wide lake. Its color is a combination of yellow and red, filled with poison, bubbling, horrible vapors going in all directions. Even on the water, when the waves would hit each other, just by the friction of the waves, fire would ignite. Can you imagine that? Usually, water puts out fire. But this water would start fire. In the 1960s, in Cleveland, Ohio, there was a newspaper by the counterculture who was really against the abuse of the establishment. And it was called the Burning River News. Now you may think, what is this poetry? But it was actually historical. Because there was a river there near Lake Erie, and they were putting so much pollution from the industries. They were putting so much waste and toxins in the river that a boat, somehow or other, some sparks came out of a boat and lit the river on fire. And it burnt down the bridge on top of it. Hare Krishna. That's toxins in water could make the water fiery. Now multiply that by billions of times and you have Kaliya's lake. Flames and sparks shooting out of the water. So venomous. And here's little Gopal. He's only about 6 years old. And he smiles very, very happily and climbs up a kadamba tree. Srila Prabhupada quotes the acharyas, how is it that this kadamba tree was still there? Everything around was dead. And he explained that Garuda, knew that Krishna was going to come and do this lila. So he put nectar on. He sat on that tree and put nectar on that tree to keep it alive. And that Kadamba tree is still there today. Krishna climbed up that Kadamba tree, very happy, and pretending himself to be just like a human boy, he prepared himself for a fight. And he waved his arms around and tightened his belt. And then jumped in. Now, Krishna was very small. And that lake was huge. But when Krishna jumped in, it made such a splash. No one has ever seen such a splash. All the sides, all the shores of this 8-mile lake were just overflowing with massive waves. The entire lake was agitated like anything just by Krishna's jumping in. Yashoda Mai, years before, she looked in Krishna's mouth, Brahmandagat, on the bank of Yamuna, and she saw the entire universe in Krishna's belly. Yes, she looked down and there she saw the entire universe with the sun and the moon and the planets and all the devatas and all living beings and all the population of the earth. Everything was in Krishna's belly. Everything simultaneously was inside Krishna and outside of Krishna. And Krishna is both inside and outside of everything. That is Krishna. And although the entire universe is within his stomach, Yashoda Mai's picking him up and he's light as a feather. Hare Krishna. But at other times, he just made himself very heavy and Yashoda Mai had to put him down. So on this occasion, Krishna made himself, although the same size, made himself so heavy, like the universe. It caused such a splash. And all this fiery, red, yellow water saturated with the most deadly of all poisons was just pouring everywhere, splashing everywhere. And then little Krishna, smiling, began to play in the water. He was splashing and making so much music the way he was splashing. When he did this, all the associates of Kaliya were also venomous. They were very angry and began to hiss. And tons of poison started pouring out of their mouth to intensify the poison of the lake. They were so angry. And everyone was watching. The gopas, the cows. And Krishna was just going in circles around and around and around and splashing and playing and frolicking. Kaliya, he could not tolerate anyone coming into his abode. He was so absolutely envious and egoistic. How could anyone come into his lake without his permission? Sometimes you go to people's homes and it says no trespassing. Or they have dogs barking to keep trespassers away. Or they have various types of locks and walls and security systems. Well, Kaliya, he considered himself the enjoyer, the proprietor, and he could not tolerate anyone. This is a demoniac quality. We become so possessive. In the story of Krishna's birth, we read about how the six sons of Marichi. They made an aparad to Lord Brahma. So they took birth as the six grandsons of Hiranyakashipu. And they went and did tapasya to Lord Brahma for a long time to get mystical powers and benedictions. And when Hiranyakashipu heard that his grandsons did that without his permission, he was so angry. How could you do this without my permission? That he cursed them all to be killed in their next births by their own father, Kalanemi, who became Kamsa. And they became the six sons of Devaki who were killed by Kamsa. So this is an example. How when the pure, eternal, selfless soul comes under the influence of the ego to such an extreme, and we find that historically when people become very, very, very powerful, they cannot tolerate anyone acting outside of their command. So Kaliya, can you imagine how angry he was that this little cowherd boy was swimming around in his lake? So he appeared, his eyes were angry as anything. And do you know how many eyes he had? He had 1,000 heads. That means 2,000 eyes. All those 2,000 eyes were red as fire with anger. And he attacked Krishna and bit Krishna in the chest. Then after biting Krishna, he coiled his body around Krishna. Now here he is. There's the coils. Krishna's wrapped in the coils, and on top of that, there's 1,000 heads, all breathing fire. And they weren't like the snake heads that you see on the grass. These were massive. Each one of his heads were probably bigger than this whole temple. Huge heads. And he started to squeeze Krishna. And Gopal became completely still and silent. Why? He wanted to increase the love of his devotees. As he did this, the cowherd boys were looking on. And little Krishna, whose limbs were so tender and soft, were in the coils of this massive serpent. And he appeared to be lifeless. He wasn't moving at all. The gopas, they fell unconscious in agony. They couldn't tolerate seeing this. And the cows, they were so absolutely stunned that tears began to well in their eyes, but the fear of seeing Krishna in this condition made their hearts so hot that it dried up the tears. They couldn't even cry for some time. And then after some time, there was nothing but tears. And the cowherd boys would wake up and look up and see Krishna in that condition, and again they would fall, they would cry, they would weep, they would fall unconscious. Meanwhile, inauspicious omens took place on the earth, on the fire, and in the land. I mean, in the earth and the land and the sky. And in people's bodies. There were earthquakes. there were meteors falling from the sky. And everybody in Vrindavan, their entire body started trembling and their eyes were twitching. Nanda Maharaj, Yashoda Mai, and all the others, the gopis and the gopas who were all in the village of Vrindavan, when they saw this, the only thing they could think of is Krishna must be dead. Because they were always thinking of Krishna. And thinking that Krishna was dead, they were in so much absolute anxiety that they were on the verge of death themselves. What saved them? It was Balaram. Balaramji understood what was happening. And he knew that nothing could harm Krishna. So he smiled. Everyone else was weeping and gasping and about to die. And Balaram was smiling. That smile was so powerful that it kept everyone else alive. It can't be so bad if Balaram is smiling. Sometimes we hear from Srila Prabhupada's disciples that they simply live for Prabhupada's smile. If we please Prabhupada and he smiles upon us, what else is there? That smile empowers us, it invigorates us, it can help us overcome all obstacles. Well, what is Prabhupada's smile? Balaram is the original guru. That's Balaram's smile manifesting through the spiritual master. Yasya prasada bhagavat prasado, yasya prasada nagati kutopi. When the guru is pleased and smiles, Krishna smiles. It's Krishna smiling through him. And when the guru is displeased, it's Krishna's displeasure manifesting through. So Balaram's smile empowered them with life. And they began to search for Krishna. They looked on the ground and there was Krishna's footprints. Now there are so many cowherd boys and there are so many cows all leaving hoof prints and footprints all over Vrindavan. But Krishna's footprints were very special because they had the conch shell and the Goda and the lotus flower, different designs are in Krishna's footprints. And it is explained by Sanatana Goswami that whenever Krishna and the gopas would go out to herd the cows, they all had a rule. Peacocks, the cows, the calves, all the other animals, the gopas, they would never, ever, ever step on Krishna's footprints. Because they were considered the ultimate ornament of the earth and the ultimate ornament of Vrindavan. So Nanda and Yashoda and all the gopas and the gopis, they all began to follow Krishna's footprints in great haste. And meanwhile, there were earthquakes and there were meteors and their bodies were trembling and twitching. From a distance, they saw Krishna in the coils of this massive serpent. It was absolutely unbearable. They tried to ask the gopas, what happened? How did he get there? And the gopas would just fall down unconscious. They couldn't even say a word. They were utterly tormented by this scene. Because they were prema bhaktis. Their only happiness in life was Krishna's happiness. Krishna was their life and soul. They had already surrendered their bodies, their minds, their words, their property, their everything to Krishna. They surrendered their hearts to Krishna. if Krishna's in danger, this is billions of times more painful than our own danger. When a mother loves her child, to see the child in pain is far more painful to the heart than her own pain. That's the nature of love. Multiply that infinitely, and we understand the pain of the residents of Vrindavan when they saw Krishna, who was apparently in a lifeless condition. Yashoda Mai was weeping and heaving, and she decided she couldn't just stand there. She was trying to jump into the lake of boiling poison. But the elder gopis, they were holding her back somehow or other. She was like a cow that was seeing her calf in such a dangerous condition. She fell unconscious. And all the other gopis, they were in the same exact state of mind as her, just to somehow or other keep her alive and keep themselves alive. They were all singing the pastimes of Lord Krishna. It was their only life. Meanwhile, Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd men, they were delirious. Seeing Krishna in that condition, they all wanted to jump in the lake and swim over to Kali and try to fight him. But Balaram stopped all them. Balaram was laughing. Everyone was weeping. Their hearts were broken. Their minds were crushed. They were in total anguish. And Balaram was smiling and laughing and joking. He said that in my form of Sheshanaga, Krishna never plays with me like this. But he's playing with this insignificant mundane snake. What is his good fortune? And then he said to the residents of Vrindavan, why are you afraid? Do you think my little brother Krishna is in danger from this insignificant little water snake? But they were not able to understand his humor. He was in the coils of Kaliya for 48 minutes, one muhurta. And by this time, the intensity of the love and separation of all the residents of Vrindavan was intolerable. It was killing them from within. Can you imagine Sri Radharani and the gopis, Nanda and Yashoda, Sridhama and Sudama? They were helpless. There was nothing they could do. And Krishna was motionless. Now, why would Krishna do this to his devotees? Why did he stay there all that time? This is the nature of love. Those who want simple shanti or peace in life usually don't become devotees of Krishna. They usually become some other type of yogi. Because Krishna doesn't care to give peace to his devotees. Krishna wants to give prema. He wants to give love. And love is dynamic. It's compared to ecstatic love, piece is quite boring, actually. It's very dynamic. And Krishna arranges these wonderful, wonderful pastimes just to increase the dynamics of that love. Because the soul is eternal, and Krishna is the eternal source of all souls, and Krishna is all attractive. So all of the different devotees, whether they were in Madhurya Ras, Vatsalya Ras, Sakya Ras, or Dasya Ras, according to their relationship with Krishna, they were so totally absorbed in these feelings of separation from Krishna. He was right there in front of their eyes, but the separation was that they were helpless to help him, and it appeared that he was about to be killed. Now, if they were thinking that this is Vishnu, nothing could kill him, they wouldn't be able to experience this ecstasy. But by the Yogamaya potency, or Lila Shakti, Krishna appeared to be a little boy, their friend, or their son. And therefore, the intensity of the absorption of their concern for Krishna, their prayer for Krishna, their love for Krishna, was beyond limits. Yes, Krishna remained in Kaliya's coils, especially just to give that most extraordinary pleasure of transcendental ecstasy, which appeared to be pain, because the pain of love, when you lose a lover in this world, is nothing but suffering. There's no pleasure in it, because they're gone. But the pain of the love of separation from Krishna is ecstasy. Because Krishna's never separated from us. He's within the heart. And he's reciprocating with the intensity of the absorption of our offering of love. So how Krishna increases the experience of his devotee's love is most wonderful. And in this world, the dangers, the problems, actually they're opportunities to increase the absorption we have in Krishna. In fact, the six Goswamis taught by their own example and Lord Chaitanya's teachings how to cultivate love and separation. So Krishna remained there and silently watched as all the residents of Vrindavan were weeping and crying and screaming and praying and fainting and getting up and seeing it and fainting again. And meanwhile, here's this massive thousand hooded serpent breathing poison and fire in the middle of a boiling lake of fire, and Krishna's in his coils. Any of you mothers or fathers, imagine seeing your little child in that predicament. Hare Krishna. Whatever Bollywood or Hollywood movies there may be, or whatever novels may be written, no one can create an adventurous scene like Krishna. In fact, whatever they invent is all by the power of Krishna. So when Krishna wants to stage a performance, it's the ultimate. This is tragedy. When they were all at the very limits where their anguish was so deep and so uncontrollable that they were all about to just give up their lives, at least apparently. Then Krishna expanded his body slightly, and Kaliya, with all of his power, was trying to squeeze Krishna. But that little soft cowherd boy expanded his body, and the coils of Kaliya were opening, opening, opening. It was a struggle. Kaliya was squeezing, and Krishna was expanding, and Kaliya couldn't do anything except slacken his coils. Then Krishna just slipped out and jumped in the water. Haribo. And Kaliya was so angry with this. He wanted to bite Krishna, to eat Krishna. So he was attacking Krishna with his hoods. And Krishna kept going around in circles. He was effortlessly, circle after circle after circle. And Kaliya, all of his thousand heads were attacking Krishna. He was going in circle after circle after circle. And Kaliya was chasing and chasing and chasing and chasing until Kaliya got so dizzy, but he couldn't touch Krishna. What a beautiful scene. And meanwhile, the residents of Vrindavan, what excitement. They were enthralled. What's going to happen to Krishna? He's just swimming around like this. And Kali is going, he's swimming, swimming. It's unbearable for them to see this. And then when Kali, all of his heads were dizzy. Then the Lord, he took one of those dizzy heads. Huge hoods, and with one of his hands he pushed the hood down and jumped on top and danced. He was dancing. Now here are 1,000 hoods. There was 101 primary heads, which were extremely powerful. And they were all trying to bite Krishna, to eat Krishna. And Krishna was dodging them all, dancing. He danced so beautiful on this hood of Kaliya. Nobody has ever seen such a dance performance. Like a theatrical actor. With his arms, with his legs, he was smiling, dancing. And what a stage. You know how slippery a serpent's hood is? And yet Krishna, he didn't miss a step. It's a slippery serpent head moving around very fast, and Krishna's dancing upon it. And how he danced. Now there are dancers in this world, even the best dancers, they can do all these nice steps, and they could twirl around and do circles and move forward and move backward. But let them try to do it on a moving serpent's head. Krishna showed that he is the original source of all artistic talents. He was dancing so beautifully. And he looked at the young gopis, because they were at that stage called Purvaraga, where they hadn't yet met Krishna in the nights. They were just five or six years old themselves. They were just beginning to develop that conjugal love, that love for Krishna. And as Krishna was dancing, he was giving sidelong glances upon them, and through his glance he was telling them that just be patient. You see how I'm dancing now? I will be dancing with you like this in the forests of Vrindavan. As Krishna was dancing, the demigods were so enthralled that the Gandharvas and the Charanas, and they came down with mridangas, the wives of the devatas, and began to play different forms of drums and musical instruments for Krishna to dance. Those lotus feet, which were so soft that when Yashoda Mai would touch them, they would change colors. So soft. There's nothing softer than Krishna's lotus feet. So lotus-like. They were kind of pinkish blue, his soles of his feet. And when Yashoda Mai would just touch them, they would turn color because they were so soft. And the gopis, later on, they would be crying, thinking of Krishna's feet without any shoes, going through the pastures of Vrindavan. What if a pebble or a stone or a stick touches Krishna's feet? How much it will pain him because they're so soft. The gopis were thinking, even the softest part of my body may harm and cause pain to Krishna's feet because they are so soft. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, "Ye yathamam prapadyante tamstathaiva bhajamya." That Krishna reveals himself according to how we approach him. To the gopis, Krishna's feet were softer than the softest butter. But to Kaliya, every single step of Krishna's dance was like a massive thunderbolt crashing into his head. And he was dancing very fast. Sometimes very fast steps. And it was for the gopis watching and the gopas, it was like, it was so, just such beautiful steps. What a dance. But to Kali, it was thunderbolt bashing his head. It was unbearable. Every step, Krishna was smiling and kicking and kicking and kicking and kicking and kicking. How wonderful. This is Krishna. This is what makes Krishna so special of all avatars. Hiranyaksha, there was a big fight with Varahadev, and they were fighting with clubs, and they were fighting with hooves and feet and fists, and finally Varahadev punched him and stabbed him with his tusk. And Lord Narasingadev, there was a fight that lasted for hours with Hiranyakashipu, and ultimately with his nails he tore him apart. Such fighting. And Ramchandra with Kumbhakarna and Ravana fighting with bows and arrows, cutting off their heads, yes, piercing their hearts. Now, Kaliya was every bit as powerful as any of these demons. And he had just killed all Krishna's friends. So he was really bad. And he was destroying all the vegetation of the Vrindavan forest all around it. So Krishna had every single reason to really be angry at this Kaliya. But how did Krishna fight him? By dancing and smiling. He didn't punch Kaliya. He didn't use his Sudarshan chakra. Didn't even use his cowherd boy stick. He just danced. That is Krishna. This is like Madhurya killing. He was so sweet. It's just like. And after he danced for a while on one head, the head just. First fire started pouring out. Then all the venom in that head started pouring out like vomit. Probably really ugly scene. You would think it was really ugly and it must have smelled obnoxious. He was vomiting volumes and volumes of poison. And then when all the poison was outside all over the place, then he started vomiting blood. Snake blood. Volumes of it. But because Krishna was dancing on him, the whole scene looked beautiful. This is Krishna's supernatural power. And then that hood would just collapse. Total. Finished. And then Krishna, and then another hood would attack Krishna, and Krishna would just push it down and jump on top of it and do the same dance. Actually, not the same dance. Because Krishna's ever new, every fresh. Every step of Krishna's dance is absolutely new. Apparently never done before. You know, we could, like, in the material world, there are certain dance steps. Like, this is how you do this step, and you just kind of do the same thing. Well, Krishna invents a new dance every time he dances. Ever new, ever fresh, ever exciting. He's dancing and dancing on the next hood until he pounded and crushed that head until poison, then blood, then the head just collapsed. Krishna did this on over 100 heads. And it came to the point that Kaliya was on the verge of death. And in that state, something happened. His wives, the Nagapatnis, were great devotees of Krishna. And they were always talking about Krishna. And he hated it. But somehow or other, they were so attached to Krishna. They were always praying to Krishna, please save our husband. And he thought they were just a bunch of sentimental, foolish women. But he was so powerful and so great in his own estimation. He never respected or listened to any of their Krishna consciousness. But because of the association of his wives, the seed of bhakti was within his heart. But because of his envy and his sins and his cruelty, it was totally covered. But when Krishna danced and danced and danced on his heads, the pain and the anguish of what he was going through uncovered his ability to appreciate what his wives had given him. And suddenly, that seed of bhakti began to sprout. And Kaliya became very humble, very submissive. And he realized that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, the source of everything, and the ultimate and only shelter for all living beings. And Kaliya, on the verge of dying, took shelter of Krishna. At that point, the Nagapatnis, Kaliya's wives, came forward with folded hands to offer prayers to Krishna. They were thinking, when they saw Kaliya trying to destroy Krishna, they were thinking, let our husband die. Maybe by being killed by Krishna, he will be liberated and get a better birth in his next life. But when they saw that their husband was actually humble, the first time they ever saw him like that, and he was actually taking shelter, they were so happy. This was the perfection and the answer to all their years and years of prayers. And they came forward and praised Krishna. You are the source of everything, Krishna. And see how fortunate our husband is, that you are dancing upon his head with your lotus feet. Lakshmi Devi, she wanted to get the dust of the lotus feet of Krishna. In Vrindavan, there is a place called Srivan, where for centuries, Lakshmi was performing tapasya to get the dust of the feet of Krishna, to get to serve the lotus feet of Krishna. Because we see Lakshmi is always serving the lotus feet of Narayan. But Krishna is a cowherd boy. She wasn't allowed, even after centuries of tapasya. In Sri Rangam, Lord Chaitanya was speaking to Venkatabhata. He said, "You are worshipping Narayan, but Lakshmi left Narayan to try to serve the lotus feet of Krishna." And Venkatabhata said, "But Narayan and Krishna are the same person, so there's no fault in Lakshmi." And Lord Chaitanya said, "Yes, that is true. They are the same person, and there is no fault in Lakshmi, but she never got to serve the feet of Krishna." Because she was too attached to being the queen of Vaikuntha. She wasn't willing to be a simple gopi and carry cow dung on her head and milk cows and love Krishna in that, just as a cowherd boy and a cowherd girl, spontaneous, madhurya bhav, so sweet. So the Nagapatnis were saying, even Lakshmi, after centuries of tapasya, could not get the lotus feet of Gopal. And even Brahma and Shiva, they're praying and doing tapasya. After years of tapasya, Lord Shiva took the form of Nandeshwar Hill. He became a mountain in Nandagaon, just so that he could get Krishna's feet on his head. And Brahma became the mountain in Barsana, four mountains, to get the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna on his head. And our husband, Kaliya, he's the most sinful, he's the most wicked, he's a murderer. So many people he has killed. And he's so envious. But yet, you are dancing on his head with your lotus feet. What could possibly have brought upon this good fortune except your causeless mercy? So the Nagapatnis were praising Kaliya's good fortune. And after praising Krishna and praising her husband's fortune, they prayed that now, just see, he's humble and he's surrendering to you. Please spare his life. And besides that, we will be widows. And if we're widows, then who knows what other kind of atheistic snake is going to want to exploit us without a protector. But now our husband's a devotee. So save our lives by saving his life so we can be under the protection of a devotee. And on the basis of the prayers of the Nagapatnis, Krishna accepted Kaliya. And then in conclusion, Kaliya was, all of his heads were just laying down unconscious, completely devastated. But then one of them somehow or other came up. And it says he folded his hands. I don't know what kind of hands he had. And then he began to pray to Krishna, how fortunate he was and how merciful Krishna was. And he said, Krishna, please understand that we are all bound to act according to our previous conditionings. It's very, very difficult to someone to act against their own conditionings. And somehow or other, whatever my karma was in the past, I took birth as a snake in this huge, gigantic snake body. So naturally, I'm envious and I'm poisonous and all of these things. And even though my wives were giving me so many good instructions, still very difficult to act differently than our own conditioned nature. And we see, even as devotees, we are conditioned to certain types of enjoyment and how temptations and aversions are so powerful within us. Very, very difficult to overcome them. In fact, material conditioning is so strong that only the mercy of Krishna can help us. Those two fingers of Yashodamai that finally tied up Krishna represent the devotee's personal determination and Krishna's mercy. Krishna tells in Gita, for the devotee who surrenders to me with enthusiasm and determination, I preserve what they have and carry what they lack. We have to be determined. We have to be enthusiastic to overcome the impediments of our own inner previous karmic conditionings. And if we are sincere, serious, and we do not have ulterior motives, then we will attract Krishna's mercy. And that mercy alone, which is attracted by our own serious endeavors, can help us to overcome our conditionings. But sometimes, like Kaliya, in the process, Krishna smashes us so that we really, really deeply understand the cost of our conditionings, of our sinful tendencies, so that we really deeply pray for his help and we really strive to overcome it. Because if we take Maya lightly, then we can never overcome her prowers. We have to take it very seriously. And sometimes we have to really be burnt before we take it seriously. Birth after birth after birth after birth, the laws of karma appear to be punishment. But actually, on a higher level of perception, the punishments of karma are purifications. When we suffer, it's meant to teach us a lesson. And if we're armed with proper knowledge in the association of devotees, hearing Krishna's words, we understand. We may not know specifically why I am going through this, what I have done in the past, but we can understand the principle that whatever sufferings I'm going through or whatever addictions to sense gratification that we are inflicted with. It's due to past mistakes we've done. Whatever addictions we have cultivated them. We have fed them. We have created them and nourished them. And it's very, very difficult to give it up. But when we suffer, we realize it's not worth it. And when we understand how powerful material conditionings are, and we're smashed by the results of them, it increases our determination, it humbles us, and it causes us to really take shelter of the Lord's holy name. And that is exactly what happened to Kaliya. And he's admitting, I have such bad conditions, such addictions due to my past karma. But now, because he suffered so bad, and because of the prayers of his wives were always praying for him. But he could never access the benefits of the prayers until he was in such a humble state. Then he accepted them wholeheartedly. And he surrendered. He said, so please, you know, forgive me for my sins. Excuse me. I was acting due to my karmic reactions. But now I am yours. Now we all know the story of Garuda. Garuda was going to eat Kaliya. But somehow or other, Garuda was not allowed in that lake in the Yamuna, in Vrindavan. So that's why Kaliya was living there. That's a long story. It's due to an aparad. So Kaliya was thinking that actually after Kaliya surrendered and the Nagapatnis, his wives, prayed, Krishna delivered Kaliya. He gave him pure devotional service. And now Kaliya was praying, I want to be the servant of Garuda. Previously, Garuda was his worst enemy. He said, I want to be the servant of Garuda. And because you, Garuda is your servant who carries you around wherever you want to go, if ever Garuda's not around, just call for me. And as his servant, I will carry you wherever you want to go. Krishna told Kaliya that you should leave this lake and you should go to the ocean and take your wives and take your family and your children and all your friends with you. And don't fear Garuda, because when he sees my footprints on your head, you will be his friend. In this way, one of the greatest of all the demons, or asuras, the most envious and cruel, Krishna didn't kill him, but he gave him pure devotional service and made him his eternal servant. And the scriptures explain that sometimes when in some yugas, when Krishna manifests his lila in Vrindavan, instead of Akrura taking Krishna to Mathura for the wrestling match, Kaliya takes him. He became Krishna's eternal servant, eternal loving devotee. That is the power of the prayers of the Nagapatnis, his wives. Through this story, many lessons are there. One is the importance of being dear to the Vaishnavas. The importance of having the prayers of a Vaishnava. Whenever a devotee who has love for Krishna in their heart prays for anyone, it's just a matter of time. Maybe in this birth, maybe in a future birth. But that love for God will awaken. That is the power of a Vaishnava's prayer. Because Krishna loves his devotees so much, he will never allow his devotees' prayers to go in vain. Somehow or other, to become dear to a devotee is the greatest aspiration for all of us. Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that Kaliya represents envy, deceitfulness, harshness toward others. It's a demon of the mind, an anartha. But if we take shelter of Krishna, he will transform that, transform hatred into love, envy into compassion, arrogance into humility. If we simply allow Krishna to dance on our tongues, and we chant with that same type of sincerity as Kaliya did in the end, and we have the prayers of Vaishnavas around us, then this anartha within us will be transformed. And the awakening of prema will take place. This coming Friday is Janmashtami, where we will celebrate Krishna's most glorious appearance within this world. Today, let us prepare our consciousness for this celebration by meditating on the most extraordinary, sweet compassion that Krishna manifests within his Leela. And in the age of Kali, Krishna appears as Lord Chaitanya. And all he did was dance. Throughout the night, the Srivasangam, throughout the Rath Yatra parade, sometimes all day and all night, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would simply dance. And in his dancing, the sweetness of that all-attractive dancing in the Nam Kirtan, he was removing the sins of all living entities who take shelter of him. Krishna told Kaliya that anyone who remembers this pastime and who takes shelter of me, I will give the same love, the same mercy as I give to you, And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us how to do that. By remembering these beautiful pastimes, by remembering Krishna's teachings, and by taking shelter of him, especially through the chanting of his holy names. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada had such great faith in Krishna Katha, in hearing about Krishna and speaking about Krishna. He had such great faith in the holy name of Krishna. He left Vrindavan with Krishna in his heart. And however sinful, however fallen, whatever mistakes any living entity made, Srila Prabhupada knew with full confidence that simply by remembering Krishna and taking shelter of Krishna and chanting Krishna's name, we could be delivered. Dina hina yata chilo. Harinam udharilo, tara sakshi jagai madhai. Even jagai and madhai can be delivered by the mercy of the devotees and the holy names. Kali is like jagai and madhai. By the prayers of Nityananda Prabhu, and accepting the holy name of Krishna, Jagai and Madhai became pure devotees. But they suffered too. When Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stood before them with his Sudarshan Chakra, they were really suffering. But that suffering sobered them to accept Nityananda Prabhu's prayers and be grateful for them and take shelter. Similarly, Kaliya, with the prayers of his wives, the devotees, by realizing their mistakes, by being smashed, they took shelter and became pure devotees. So yes, someday we could be dancing in kirtan with Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, with Krishna, the gopas, the gopis. We could be dancing with Jagai and Madhai. We could dance in kirtan with Kaliya, who with all of his thousand mouths are emanating, not poison, but the sweetest nectar of the holy names. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you very much. Would you like to dance? Would you like to say a few words?
I agree.
Very eloquent.